Cool. Thank you for joining us. I'm Karan Deepanand, the Group Program Manager on the Windows Azure Management and User Experience team. So if you've seen any of the demos so far or session on Windows Azure, everything you've seen from the portal perspective is what my team is responsible for. What we want to do today is there's been a lot of announcements starting last Thursday on Windows Azure. So we want to step back for a few minutes, just recap what all's going on, and then dive deep into the all-up Windows Azure Management story. But before we do that, what I wanted to do was just get a quick show of hands on how many of you use Azure today? OK, that's good. That's a pretty good percentage. I wasn't expecting that many people. That's pretty good. And one other quick question. How many of you would call yourself IT pros? OK, versus developers? Excellent, awesome. Then there's always a mix and everyone doing everything. So that's great. That at least helps me plan for the next 60 minutes' worth of content. And then, of course, whatever's left, you can always take in Q&A. So with that, let's just spend 5 minutes and just recap everything that's happened since Thursday when we announced the completely revamped, or what we internally call the reimagined, Windows Azure. What used to be Windows Azure when we were doing these sessions last year at TechEd versus what's now, Windows Azure has fundamentally changed in a lot of different ways, from everything to being a lot more flexible in the tools you use, in the environments you use, and languages you use, to embracing both the Microsoft stack deeply as well as all open stacks. Windows Azure has come a long way in how we treat non-Microsoft stacks as well natively in the platform. And of course, continuing on the story we had built over the last 4 to 5 years, it's as solid and rock solid as ever, with more and more services getting added. So we've innovated in the last 1 year on all these three dimensions, on making it more and more easy and flexible for you guys to use it, as well as making sure that what Windows Azure stands for in terms of SLAs, reliability, and being a rock solid Azure cloud platform, it still holds up to the promise. So what really got announced was, in addition to the existing cloud services, or what used to be called hosted services, it's now renamed to cloud services, we also introduced two other ways, and on either side of the spectrum, to be able to run and manage your applications using either virtual machines, which is effectively giving you a full-blown persisted server running for you in Azure on your behalf. So that was one extreme of the spectrum, where you can just get a full server. So if you're used to getting a hosting provider to host servers for you can actually get a lot of the same capabilities now with Windows Azure as well. We can spin up both Windows and Linux VMs in Azure. And of course, then you can run any workload, be it SQL, SharePoint, Active Directory, on those virtual machines. And you can pretty much run the way you run your server infrastructure on premises in Azure in the public cloud. And it came along with the core virtual machine capabilities. It also came with a very robust stack for networking. And we'll get into that in a few minutes as well, which is ability to both create virtual networks in Azure, so you have a dedicated VNet in Azure, but also extend the same network down to on-premises, so the cloud just looks like an extension to your data center in cloud. Oh, sorry, on-premises. Now, that was one extreme of the spectrum where you just have full machines to run. And the other extreme, we talked about the ability to have websites, Windows Azure websites, which is you don't even see or worry about roles and machines. And all you do is just give us the code or the application that you're running or want to run. And it is a completely managed, still gives you the scalability, still gives you the flexibility to what you want to run there. But it's a fully managed PaaS service. And you can run everything from ASP.NET to Node to PHP. And more frameworks will get added soon. And it has some couple of other benefits of doing rapid and continuous deployment. So no longer do you need to go build an application all up and deploy it. You can do incremental updates rather quickly using, of course, FTP and web deploy as the old protocols, but as well as newer ways of building, including Git and TFS. So with that spectrum, Azure now gives you everything from what you are traditionally used to, just getting a server and running your code or running your application, to, of course, the PaaS way of building infinitely scalable applications using cloud services. That's your traditional web role and worker role, as well as just running websites or your web applications natively fully managed for you. So that's the spectrum of how Windows Azure has fundamentally changed since last year we heard and what's happening now. Of course, in addition to these three different ways of hosting your core, Windows Azure also offers lots and lots of different application building blocks, as we like to call them. And everything from whether you're looking at for a developer service like caching or messaging with Service Bus, to doing deep analytics with Hadoop or high performance computing, as well as for if you're an IT pro and you want to just deal with networks and traffic management and CDNs, there's a whole bunch of these new or these building block services that you can consume in addition to the virtual machines, websites, and Azure webs and cloud services, so that you can build a fairly rich and robust application using the new cloud design principles, which is both scalable, at the same time it's reliable and redundant. So the question that comes up is, when you have these three different ways of, three possible ways of picking and choosing what you run, as well as using application blocks, what is it that you need to really go manage? And what should be a management strategy all up for Windows Azure B? And that's what we want to focus the next 55, 60 minutes of the session on. What is the all-up management story for Azure? What's the platform look like? What tools are available? And what is it that you need to worry about versus what the cloud automatically takes care of for you? So just to put things in perspective, this is the stack, if you will, that you deal with when you are on-premises. Everything from the network hardware, whether you're buying switches or routers, to buying actual hosts and servers, and then installing the operating system, VNets, and you go up the stack, and you can, depending on whether your persona, whether you're a developer or you're IT pro or you mix or you do everything, you manage pretty much all the things listed in this green block, in one way or the other. There are different tools to do that, and the different things you have to worry about while managing the stack, but you are responsible for the entire stack all up. Now, let's contrast it with what Windows Azure gives you. Of course, if you can choose to run your application in a virtual machine, in which case you're still responsible for what the operating system and the updating the operating system is. Windows Azure gives you a highly available environment to host those VMs, and hence it comes up with its SLAs and guarantees on how to run it. But beyond the initial installation of the operating system, how you patch the OS, how you manage the virtual network, not the physical network, or how you manage firewall rules, what's in, what's out, how you scale up, essentially is still something that you have to worry about. And it's great because for legacy applications or applications that you're running on premises and you just want to migrate them onto Azure, it's great because nothing changes. Your tools remain the same, as well as the methods and processes that you've used so far just continue as is because you're running, instead of running on your physical servers, you've moved the pain of managing physical hardware to Azure. Get the SLA, get the geo footprint of Microsoft data centers, and just run virtual machines in Azure. But you're responsible for everything from the operating system stack upwards. If you choose to also use cloud services, then one thing that goes, you don't have to worry about as much anymore is the operating system itself. Managing the operating system, the patches, how they get placed, how they get scaled out, that is automatically managed by Windows Azure. Of course, you have to build your applications to take advantage of this design point, which essentially means your applications have to be stateless or with externalized state. That's what makes it easy for Windows Azure to automatically move your machines, scale them out, scale them in as needed. So that's the benefit of cloud services, where you can actually get infinite scale by removing the dependency on anything that's specific to a machine or the operating system. And, of course, if you use the third stack, which is Windows Azure Websites, you don't have to worry about anything even from the firewall rules, the network, or the operating system. It's a fully managed PaaS service, which means all you care about is your application and your data. Everything, including how it gets placed, how it gets scaled up, how it gets managed or SLAs get delivered to you, is completely abstracted, and hence you have to spend less and less cycles on managing any of these assets. If nothing else from this session, this is one slide I would just take away summary saying which stack you choose will determine what management tools, what management APIs, what management concepts you need to go learn and remember when you're consuming Azure. The good thing is, and you don't see that on the slide, is For all the other PaaS services that we talked about, the application building block, you don't have to worry about them because they are built as a service. So the way you consume email and never worry about where the email servers live when you're using, let's say, Hotmail or Gmail or Yahoo, same way when you're consuming SQL databases or cache, you have to never worry about where those machines live, how their machines are patched or consumed. You just configure what you want to use, and they're available. So the number of concepts you have to deal with for those application building block services significantly reduce because they are fully managed services for you. So, of course, the choice between using one extreme from virtual machines to websites is really a choice of both control. If you really want to have control on what you need to deploy, or whether you have constraints on what you need to really deploy. For example, you have a strong rule of the antivirus you need to run in a VM. That's what you have to go use VMs for, a virtual machine for. If you don't really care about that, you want to do rapid development, rapid prototyping, or just host a website, you have to never worry about any of those concepts. You can use the other end of the spectrum and not worry about it. So so when you choose the stack that you want to use, or if you use one or more of those, just remember the trade-off between control that you really get, but at the same time, the amount of cycles and things you have to worry about from a management perspective. So with that, let's talk about what the management philosophy and principles is with Windows Azure's new management platform. So everything is running in the cloud, whether you're using virtual machines, cloud services, websites, or you're using any of the app building blocks. One of the things we've done is we've standardized the access to all of them using the management REST APIs. And of course, the reason I stress on the fact that they're REST APIs is we want to make sure this is accessible from whether you're sitting on a Windows box, a Mac box, or a Linux box, doesn't matter. It's cross-platform. So you can have tools, you can have scripts, you can have APIs, which are accessible from any platform, whether it's mobile, whether it's any of those different operating systems. And this is available through well-documented, publicly documented SDKs. And you can, whatever we can do through the portal, which you'll see in a few minutes, you can pretty much do everything yourself by building your own tools. So the other thing is, of course, these APIs haven't been standardized to the point where it feels like one platform. So you're not learning new concepts of how you deal with SQL databases versus caches versus service bus. The concept of namespaces, concept of the resources, they all have become standardized enough that you don't have to learn different technologies or different stacks when you're switching from one application to the other one. Of course, to access all of this, you need to have credentials, and security is locked down. Today, we use LiveID as the primary way of authenticated. Of course, using LiveID, you can generate certificates. And once you have a cert, you pretty much have full access to doing any operation on your Windows Azure services and applications. So that cert is very critical, and we'll get a little bit into more detail with what that cert does. But once you have that cert, then you can use either the portal, directly log into LiveID. You can use any of the scripting tools that we offer, everything from a PowerShell to a Bash, if you are very happy or using a Mac. I see a lot of Macs here today. So if you're sitting on a Mac box or Linux box, we have same tools available for Mac and Linux machines as well. And, of course, there is a huge ecosystem that we'll talk about of third-party tools and services built to help solve a lot of gaps or fill out some key scenarios which are specific to a certain vertical or a certain industry as well. So you have a choice of using everything from the native API to the built-in portal, built-in scripting tools, as well as pick and choose your third-party tool of choice. So before I spend any more cycles doing slide decks, even though it's a morning session, I like it, nobody's sleeping, I really don't want to put you to sleep. So let's switch over to actually doing a quick walkthrough of what all this looks like. So this is the WindowsAzure.com website where you would get started. Once you sign up for a free trial, if you're an MSDN account holder, there were a lot of questions last evening on, hey, I have an MSDN subscription. How do I use Azure? It's a little known fact probably, but you have entitled to a 750 free compute hours every month. So you can pretty much use Azure free for a pretty decent capacity if you have an MSDN subscription. But even if you don't, you can always start with a free trial, which gives you 90 days worth of free resources in Azure to go try it out. And then, of course, you can continue using it. One of the things, if I don't cover something in the topics today, is a new section on WindowsAzure.com, which is the management section, which actually has pretty much all the content I'll cover with a whole bunch of videos. So if you need to go back, refer something, you'll see detailed management concepts, tasks, tools available for different technologies that you choose to use. So that's a new section that got introduced when we launched last Thursday on WindowsAzure.com. So once you sign up and you sign in, this is the new Windows Azure portal that got launched as well as part of the launch that happened last Thursday. And what you're looking at is a completely revamped, rebuilt, new Windows Azure portal. This is built in HTML, so you can access this from your tablet, from your phone. We don't test phones yet, but yeah, you can definitely try it out. I got a tweet from somebody this morning saying this looks pretty awesome on my Android. And I was like, thank you. We'll include that in our test matrix as well, but we didn't know people were accessing this from their Galaxy phones as well. But it kind of works. And that's the principle behind building these tools, which is they are all open. Everything you see happening here, you can access yourself using the REST APIs as well. So you can include it into your own tool set, or you can just programmatically manage Azure if you need to. So let's do a quick tour of what the Windows Azure portal looks like. Essentially, you have a list of all services that are available. If you are an existing Azure user, which a lot of you are, you'll see a few services missing from this list right now, which are available on the older portal, or what the current portal is. And this is a point-in-time thing. The Windows Azure, the new portal, is still a preview. And our goal is before end of the year, all the services will be part of the new portal. So it's just a point-in-time, new services start lighting up. The other thing you'll notice here is there's a lot of consistency between different services. So whether you're managing websites or whether you're managing virtual machines, the way you deal with the portal or you use the portal remains consistent across different resources. So apart from the list of services, what you see on the bottom here is the command bar. This is where all the actions that you can take on a given resource lights up. So for example, if you're looking at a virtual machine, you can start seeing commands like connect, which is remote desktop, restart a VM. Similarly, for websites, you can just browse to the VM, start, stop, upload. So what you see on the bottom is a command bar. There's a quick help icon, and this help is live help as well. So depending on where you are in the portal at any given time, if you get stuck, just pull up the help icon, and it'll start looking at which screen you are on and pull in content relevant to that screen. So that's inbuilt help. It keeps getting updated, so you never have to worry about content being stale or where to go for help. So you don't necessarily have to go to MSDN or TechNet. It's all being pulled in from multiple sources live into the portal itself. Last but not the least, this is the new create menu. And what this does is it gives you one place for you to be able to go create, whether it's your websites or you're dealing with virtual machines, cloud services. It's one place to go create any resource, any application building block right from the portal itself. And one of the other things you'll notice when you start playing with the portal is the concept of creating something quickly, or a quick create, which is the minimal number of things you need to enter, and it just creates most of the defaults. Of course, you have full capability to run a quick create or create with the advanced options as well. Or the third thing you'll see for some resources like websites and virtual machines is the whole notion of creating from a gallery. And that's where our power of ecosystem and tools built by third parties and our partners gets plugged in. So people who build websites can start plugging the websites for you to go use, so you don't have to build your own blog or own content management system. The power of the ecosystem tools and open source applications lights up. Very similar to websites, you'll see for virtual machines as well, we've partnered with both a whole bunch of Linux vendors to provide Linux VMs, as well as a lot of internal teams within Microsoft, so that pre-built images, let's say in this case, the first one is a SQL Server image. So Windows with SQL is pre-baked. And this list and this gallery of pre-built images will keep increasing to include more and more workloads out of the box. So the point is we want to make it extremely, extremely easy for you to get started and then have all the power to be able to go do advanced tasks when you're ready for it as well. But you shouldn't have to get overloaded with a lot of concepts when you just want to kick the tires. So with that, let's just go into managing one of these resources. So I have a website, which is a blog, essentially, that we started for our team. Essentially, is a WordPress blog. We call it Windows Azure Reimagined, which basically talks about our journey on how we redesigned the whole experience management APIs and the portal. And what I'm doing here is I'm running the blog, our own blog, on our own Azure websites being managed by the own portal. So we definitely eat our own dog food. We try this out. We run these large-scale services. And one of the things I get out of the box now within Windows Azure is rich metrics and monitoring. So you don't have to configure anything special. This gets enabled by default. You can start looking at the common metrics of how much CPU I'm consuming, requests in, requests out, data in, data out. In addition to monitoring, you'll see this common layout of the dashboard, which is how much usage have I incurred so far and then the day on the month, and how I'm dealing with respect to my quotas on my current subscription. This is pretty handy when you are dealing with number of cores, number of VMs that you signed up for, and it helps you get a good access to how much your bill will look like as well. And then the other things that you'll typically see on a dashboard for all dashboards is a couple of quick action tasks. So if you're a developer and all you want to do is quickly get the connection string so you can copy-paste this. Please don't read my password. You can access the connection string, inject it into Visual Studio, plug this in, and it starts working. So you'll see the same look and feel and same consistency across other resources as well. So if you're managing a cloud service, you'll see the same concept of dashboard, which shows you metrics, quotas, quick tasks. And in addition, you'll start seeing a couple of additional tabs where we want to standardize monitoring, configuration, and scaling as base concepts that we give you out of the box. So you don't have to worry about those core things. They're always enabled, so you always see wherever relevant. A monitoring tab, which gives you rich monitoring. A configuration tab, which gives you simple knobs, as well as advanced knobs to go change or manage that particular resource. So in this case, I'm managing a web role and a worker role application. I see all app-specific settings, as well as settings like which operating system that I need to run the web role and worker role on. So pretty powerful. This used to be an XML file called a csconfig. We want to get that into that in the concept section. But you essentially get a simple UI-based way of managing configuration right here. In case of websites, you basically get your web.config as a rating here. The second, the third concept really here is around scale. One of the core value props of Windows Azure is it enables you to scale fairly fast and fairly easily. So what we've done is we've invested heavily across scale concepts across websites, virtual machines, cloud services, and you can, looking at the usage. So when you come to monitoring, you start realizing your CPU is spiking and you really need more capacity. You can switch over to the scale tab, increase the number of web roles, and if you see too much CPU or network being consumed for your worker role, you can increase that as well. And you hit save, and it automatically starts scaling your application right there. So that is how easy it will be for you to be able to scale up and scale down your application, depending on how much load you notice on the monitoring tab. And then, of course, you can still do all the advanced operations of look at each instance that's running, be able to remote desktop into it, troubleshoot if you need to, restart, reimage, blah, blah, blah. Basically, the point is so it's already spun up all the new instances that I just increased the scale to. And then once these are up, probably a few minutes, you'll be able to manage these like you can manage the other instances as well. And of course, advanced operations like managing certificates, access, is all built right into the portal as well. So you'll see that across all services. Let's take an example of a website. You'll see the same thing happening for websites where you can do, have a dashboard, you can look at monitoring, configuration, scale, and so on and so forth. One concept I didn't talk about is a whole notion of linked resources. This is something new that got introduced as well. And this is based on a lot of feedback we heard over the last 1 year where, we heard that your application is not just the compute. It's a combination of the database that I'm using, the storage accounts, the service bus connections. So it's a holistic view of what my application looks like. So the notion of linked resource is one place for you to come tell us or describe to the platform that my application is this website or the compute, plus a set of databases, set of storage accounts, and we'll keep enhancing this to include all other resources. So today you can start with a web and a compute and a database, and this will soon include storage and service bus and everything else as well. Okay. One of the other things that we've done is this whole portal and the management platform is extensible, so that we've partnered, for example, if you use TFS. Anyone who uses TFS here, Team Foundation Services? Awesome. So actually have a demo called the Awesome TFS. So this is actually hooked in. So one thing you'll notice different here is there's a new tab called the Deployments tab. What I did was, for this website, I clicked on set up TFS publishing. And in my Visual Studio, every change that I make, so for example, I need to upgrade this application to a 4.5. Oops. Every change I make through VS, it actually pushes up to hosted TFS service running in Azure. I check in. Yes. Perfect. And once it's checked in, you can look at pending changes and no conflicts. All looks good. As soon as this is in, you'll start seeing in about a minute a new deployment getting kicked in by TFS itself. So there's native integration with both TFS if you're a TFS user. If you use Git, you can configure using Git as well right into the application. So all you have to do is, for setup TFS, you get a simple wizard to hook your particular application to the TFS instance that you're using, or similarly, you can set up Git and publish using a Git repository. So the point being, it's not a lockdown portal or lockdown management surface. What we ship out of the box, we have a lot of extensibility hooks so that first-party and third-party services can integrate themselves and offer a richer ecosystem of services that we want to offer both developers and IT pros here. So far, we spent cycles only on looking at, you know, websites, virtual machines, and cloud services. But similar to how we manage those compute services, managing a database or creating a database is as easy as well. So SQL, you can quickly create. Let's do my ticket demo DB. It defaults to everything else. It automatically picks a server if I have one, or else it'll prompt me. And one click, 10 seconds later, my database is up and running. So you never have to worry about provisioning your own SQL servers. Database is up and running. Right there, and you can start seeing a lot of the progress, and you see progress indicator, including errors that might happen along the process right in the portal, including all details of the stack trace if something actually does go wrong. So in addition to that, of course, you can manage your storage accounts, you can manage service bus soon. So for the time being, you might see yourself toggling between the new portal and the old portal, because if you're still using service bus for caching, you still need to use the old portal. And we've added links so you can quickly migrate between the old and new one. So with the new portal, so you can easily go between the two. It uses the same authentication of Live ID, so it's a seamless sign-in. Hopefully, soon you can do everything from the new portal, and hence any device, any platform, any browser as well. So that was all happening in the portal. From ability to do this, all through scripting. We also have the Windows Azure PowerShell. You'll see this actually in the download section when you go to windowsazure.com. You can download PowerShell tools for Windows. You can download the same set of tools, command lines for Mac and Linux as well. And what this gives you is the ability to manage pretty much your entire subscription, all assets, all services, using the tools of your choice. So one of the first things you would have to do when you download the PowerShell for Azure is, of course, I'm running this in an admin mode. So you need to get the credentials, and that's what we talked about earlier. Once you sign in with Live ID, for automated tools like TFS or tools like PowerShell, you cannot keep signing in every time you're doing it. So what you do is you get the publish settings file. Essentially, what this does is it goes on to Azure. Azure automatically generates a cert for you. So I authenticate myself. It automatically creates a certificate file. And let me just save that on the desktop real quick. Yes. Great. So now I have the management cert and a list of all subscriptions. So be careful who you hand the certificate to. These are keys to the kingdom. Anyone who has access to the cert that I just downloaded can pretty much do whatever they want with your subscription. So safeguard that. The next thing you would do is, of course, after downloading is, let's just go ahead and import the Azure Publishing Settings file that I got. I think it's kept on the desktop, so let me just drag and drop that here. Once I do that, it's not recognized. Oops, sorry. So it imports it. In my case, I only have one subscription, so it automatically defaults to the first one. But if you have multiple subscriptions that you're managing, you'll see a list of all subscriptions. But one of the things I would recommend doing is still explicitly go select the subscription that you want to use. In this case, my subscription is called Current MSTN Subscription. And let's set this as the default subscription so that all operations that I do go against the same one. Now, what I've done so far is I've got the credentials, I've authenticated on this machine. Now, this machine is set up for doing any remote operations, no matter where I am sitting. And to test this out, let's see what I have here. Let's go get a list of all machines. So if you just want to get a list of all machines, you can get storage accounts. And this then, of course, goes against the same service management APIs I talked about earlier, the REST APIs. And actually, using these credentials, it starts pulling down the list of cloud services and the virtual machines within that. So in this case, it just tells me you have one virtual machine, which is running well. So let's do this. I think I'm finished with my demo of that part. Let's try to restart this machine. So let's start restart VM. And I should just stop it and see if it works. Your VM and the service name is my LOP app. And you give it a name. So, one of the things you'll notice is you start getting both an asynchronous command being sent, tells you the operations queued up. There could be long running operations as well, so you can, of course, shut this down, run this in the background. Starts giving you detailed error messages as well. So if you're actually using this for automation, for building, for scripting, you can actually program against the PowerShell scripts are here as well. So hopefully, if this is in progress, in a few seconds we'll see. Let's go into this. In a few seconds, you'll start seeing the VM being shut down, and then we can remotely start it again as well. So it's retrieving the status now, and it stopped. So essentially, whatever you can do through the portal, you can do through PowerShell, and of course, you can do the same thing using Bash scripts as well. So you have full flexibility. And by the way, one of the things you'll notice here is when a VM is stopped, make sure it still incurs charges because it's just stopped, it's not deleted. So make sure if you don't want to use the VM, you actually delete the VM, not just stop it. So let me just restart that from the portal. And when I retrieve the status again, it'll show that the machine is actually running. So let's do get Azure VM. Essentially, what we want to show is just a round-tripping of what you can do through one set of tools. You can pretty much get the same access from tools of your own choice. So with that quick overview, and I'm not getting into details of edge virtual machines, there are a whole bunch of sessions to do that. I want to switch back to some slides and walk you through a few more concepts of managing your Azure application services on a day-to-day basis. So there are four key things to remember. First is all about deployment and configuration. In the life cycle, as the first step you would typically do, let's define what's really different when you're looking at virtual machines versus cloud services versus websites. In a case of a virtual machine, what you're deploying effectively is a VHD. That's your virtual machine capture. You can create the virtual machine, as I showed you, through the gallery or through Quick Create automatically in the portal. Or you can bring a VHD that you run on premises today. So if you're running Hypervisor and if you do or do not have System Center, it doesn't matter. But you have a Hypervisor, you have a VHD, you can pretty much copy the VHD over to an Azure blob and attach it. So you can do composition in the cloud, or you can just create it on-premise and move it. We also have a whole bunch of third partners which help you create these VMs remotely, like RightScale and OpsCore. They can actually create the VMs in their cloud and push it to your storage account on your behalf. But effectively, what you're deploying and you're managing as configuration is a VHD and all the configuration that you do in the portal around endpoints and network. We'll get into that in a few minutes as well. In case of cloud services, this is where effectively your application is your code plus the configuration. This is essentially what a CS package is. This is the output of Visual Studio doing a compile and creating your Azure package. It has two components, and something to remember and be cognizant about is there's a CS config file and there's a CS definition file. CS config is where you define things like how much scale count I want or any app-specific settings. So everything that you saw in the configure tab is essentially a part of your CS config file. So if you want to change something after the fact and you don't want to keep redeploying the application, make sure you parameterize that and stick it into the config file as opposed to putting it in the CS def itself. And of course, the tools you have available is everything from the portal itself to a tool called CS Upload, which is a scripting. Of course, you can also use PowerShell, as I just demonstrated. And for cloud services, there's a native TFS integration. So you can, instead of doing builds on a machine and pushing it, you can just use Visual Studio or tool of your choice, push it to TFS, let it do the build, unit testing, compiling, making sure it meets the criteria, and then push a good, clean build over to TFS. So as you graduate from doing a simple dev and test to actually using this in production where you want more quality control steps along the way, you can go from just using the portal to using TFS integrated into the portal as well as Visual Studio. So you have the flexibility of going being super simple to having full control, and the whole the platform enables that. And of course, similar to our partners for virtual machines, we have partners like CloudShare, which offer you a development environment, especially if you're not using Visual Studio or TFS, which lets you create a development environment in Azure and lets you use other technologies like Node.js and Java as well. Third one, of course, is websites. In case of websites, what you are deploying and configuring essentially is a web deploy package, or the actual files itself. So even if it's not a web deploy package, it just could be the raw dub root directory, if you will, of your website that runs on premises, or if you're hosting it with somebody else. You can just copy the dub root over using FTP, web deploy, Git, TFS. All those methods work. Any method that works for pushing websites today essentially works against Windows Azure websites as well. So all those protocols are opened up. And of course, you can use third-party tools like Git and Cloud9 and Joint. These are partners who offer tools for Node, other PHP, other platforms as well. So you don't have to worry about, for my stack, is there a tool available? The ecosystem story is pretty powerful now that any framework of your choice, you have a tool available. The second concept for you to remember, to be cognizant about again, is how do you think about high availability and SLA? How do you make sure that your application is up and running and meets the SLAs that you promised to your customers? So Windows Azure offers a 99.95 monthly SLA. That's the platform guarantee that Microsoft gives you as the developer or the IT pro using the platform. Of course, there are different ways how the SLA gets measured and the things that you need to go do as well to make sure that the SLA is honored. So let's quickly understand what SLA really means. For things like compute, SLA essentially means that if you have two instances of any role, whether it's virtual machines or whether it's a web role or worker role, Microsoft and the Azure Public Cloud guarantees that you will have no more than 4.3 hours of downtime in the entire year. And there are different ways we do that, and I'm going to get into that in the next slide. But if you follow the simple instructions of defining upgrade domain or fault domains, which we'll discuss in the next slide, we guarantee that the fabric controller or the brain of Windows Azure's framework will guarantee that you meet this SLAs. So you will never have more than this downtime. If it does, we actually pay you back. So, of course, if you're running a single instance, which is if you just run a single VM, the way I just spun up a single VM, that VM, of course, has a 99.9 SLA because the probability of one machine going down is way higher than two machines going down. So, of course, this does not include how your application itself behaves. So if your application code crashes and that has a downtime, hence your application has downtime, that's something that Microsoft does not control or cares about. Or if you, in your VM, you choose to reboot because you've installed some patches, that's up to you. But it does make sure that everything from network switch going down to power going down to from a data center going down, we will safeguard you against all those outages and still give you that SLA. Okay? Now, how do you make your application resilient or to use these SLAs? So there are two concepts. And if it gets too deep, don't worry about it. You can skip it. There are always slides. But essentially, there are two concepts to keep in mind. One is the notion of a fault domain. And the second is the concept of an update domain. Fault domain is essentially any single point of failure that we find in our stack, whether it's a network switch, it's a rack, it's whatever it is, something that you don't have to worry about. We guarantee that your application is automatically deployed and managed across at least two fault domains. So we learn new ways of how to deploy it. Maybe we find that racks don't go down as often, but network switches do. All that is magic that happens that you never have to worry about. But we make sure that across, if you have two instances of your VM running or role running, we will always place them across two fault domains to give you that guarantee. The second concept is of an update domain. This is something for you to go use. If you're building an application which has multiple VMs running, multiple instances running, let's say you spin up your web role across 30 instances, and you want to roll out the next version of an application, at that point, you have control over how many machines get updated with the next version or with the host update. So you can say, I want to split this app into five host update domains. And what that happens, what it does is, when we do a host update, or if you do make a change in your, let's say, config file for your application itself, we roll out the changes one update domain at a time. Once one update domain is up and running, it's only then we move to the next one. What this safeguards you against is if you have 30 instances, it's not that all 30 instances will get updated at the same time, and hence you would either have downtime. If you divide it into five, you will have no more than 1/6 of your capacity being offline because it's being updated. So that gives you safeguards against any updates that happen and bringing down your capacity of your site as well. So fault domain is something that you don't control. We automatically do it, and that's how we guarantee SLA. Update domain, by default, if you don't specify, we automatically create five. But you can create up to 20 if you have a very large application that you want to run here. Just a quick graphical representation of how this actually works. So we have a rack, and we split your web role four instances across two of those racks. And the rack is typically the fault domain boundary. But you also make sure that rack has enough redundant power supply network and blah, 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 things you don't have to worry about. And you'll always be guaranteed that your fault and update domains, which are spread across both the racks and across the instances, are taken into account when we're doing updates to your application. Similar to fault domains and upgrade domains, for virtual machines, which are single instance and are persisted, that's the biggest difference with virtual machines. It actually has state in the VM itself. You would hence need to create a VM and configure something called an availability set. I'll probably get into the demo real quick of that one. And configure two VMs, which can be load balanced. And if you define an availability set, we will still guarantee that they automatically gets deployed across two different racks. If any updates happen or any outages happen, the outage happens, worst case, to one rack only. So these availability sets are also honored across fault domains. So availability sets is for VMs, upgrade domains and fault domains is for cloud services. And the good thing is, if you're not using virtual machines or if you're just using websites, you don't have to do anything. We automatically manage all placements, all logic, how VMs are, how everything is updated for you. Of course, Windows Azure Websites, which got launched on Thursday, is in a preview period, so there's no SLA per se right now. But that's an example of a PaaS service where you don't have to deal with even concepts of upgrades and uptime and SLA. The service itself is managed for you, so we guarantee and we take care of all those concepts of update domains, availability sets, and so on and so forth. So a quick recap. If you want HA, virtual machines across cloud services and websites. For VMs, you have to worry about single instance versus multi-instance. That's pretty much everything that you do on premises today, on how you spin up more VMs and more servers and how you do scale and scale in. Essentially, the concept that you would apply in Azure. Azure has a couple of additional benefits, that the disk that you use is automatically replicated three times. It also has availability sets. So a couple of extra things that you get on top of just using vanilla VMs and servers on premises, and that's the benefit of and power of hosting the same servers in Azure versus just doing it on a standard hardware on premises. For cloud services, in addition to SLA, it also gives you infinite scale, and hence the whole notion of upgrade domains and fault domains, where you have hundreds of instances and you can split your app, and we take care of updating it, comes into effect. And for websites, you don't have to worry about it. You just use a slider and scale it, and you should be and you're good to go. Okay, third concept, and this is actually not a concept. We can do an entire session on monitoring and troubleshooting. In fact, we have a session on monitoring and troubleshooting tomorrow. I think it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So there's a session which will go deep into, if you're a developer or an IT pro, how you monitor, debug, and troubleshoot your application. But real quick, a few things to remember. Virtual machines, out of the box. You already seen we give base metrics. We also do health check, which is interesting, which is you can set up a probe or set up a URL that says, please keep pinging this, let's say, healthcheck.aspx page. If this page is not reachable, it means my machine or my app logic has gone bad. Feel free to recycle or feel free to tell the load balancer to route traffic. So that's another part. But because there is no agent on the virtual machines, that's completely your machine and you manage it, there is no further monitoring of the VM itself, which means you are responsible and hence you are in control of managing the VM using tools of your choice. So if you use System Center, for example, you can continue using System Center and stick the agent. There are a whole bunch of third-party tools available as well. We'll see a demo of one of those. We can use those to manage those VMs as well, but effectively monitoring and debugging those applications running in VMs is how you do it on-premises today, and the onus is on you. For cloud services, that's where a lot of the session tomorrow will go into how to use Windows Azure Diagnostics. Very fairly rich tool to go do deep monitoring, deep troubleshooting, inject custom metrics, custom perf counters, and pull them out to do rich correlation and monitoring as well. Of course, you can still use third-party tools to manage those as well. And we announced two partnerships last Thursday as part of the launch. Both AppDynamics and New Relic have built dedicated solutions to go manage your large-scale applications in Azure. We'll see a demo of them, one of them, in a few minutes. For websites, because you never have to worry about the infrastructure it runs on, what websites offer you for monitoring diagnostics is the whole, you can have FTP access to the diagnostics log. So anything that your application spits out or your web server spits out is available as the diagnostics log available, and you can FTP it into it, and however you troubleshoot your websites today, you can continue to do that without ever having to worry about machines and infra-level monitoring or diagnostics. Typical question that we get is, so what's the system center story all up for Azure? It's a pretty dense slide. Don't expect you to read this, but there's a session on system center and Azure to better together story. Effectively, if I were to sum up the system center story, there are two parts to it. There's a product called App Controller, which ships as part of system center, which helps you manage your subscriptions, create VMs, spin up web roles, spin up worker roles, which takes care of essentially of your deployment and configuration part. And then you can continue using Operations Manager for doing monitoring and performance monitoring of your application running in Azure. Awesome. I don't know what that was, but probably rolling thunder for System Center. But so essentially, it gives you both App Controller and Operations Manager. So if you already are using System Center, you can point it to your Azure account as well and start getting some base things out of the box. And then there's a refresh plan later this year, which we'll talk about, which will add a lot more of these capabilities. All right. That was awesome. Okay, the last concept, and hopefully, one of my last slides that I'm going to talk on slides, we'll switch back to demos, is the whole notion of scaling and auto-scaling. I showed you the slider. I quickly moved the slider from two instances to eight, but I just want to explain what really happens under the covers when you're scaling and auto-scaling. For cloud services, that's when you get the infinite scale. There's a lot of capacity available, so you don't have to worry about over-provisioning or provisioning right. What you need is what you can get on demand. So when I move the scale counter, if your app is running on two instances at a given time, you move it up, let's say pick a number six, we automatically start spinning up, and that's what the instance list started showing, more instances getting spun up. So more instances are showing up, we honor the fault domains, upgrade domains logic so that your machine, your app has the uptime while more instances are getting added or removed from your application. And of course, you can keep going as high as you want. When you do, let's say, 90 or 100, essentially what we do is we go across the data center, grab the machines, which are already kind of pre-reserved for you in some sense, and start spinning this out in the entire data center itself. So you don't have to worry about how these machines get scaled in, scaled out, how they're placed. You just increase the counter, and then there are a whole bunch of monkeys running around and spinning machines. I'm just kidding. There's a logic there that just goes fabric controller. It spins off a whole bunch of machines. And, of course, you can always scale it back, scale it down. You have the control. The best part of it all is you will only pay for the parts that you go use. Similar concept applies when you're doing it for websites as well. Let me actually show you the website's controller. When you're scaling a website, let's pick the DFS one. The scale tab looks slightly different because websites have two concepts. They have a concept of the mode in which it's running. You get 10 free websites with Windows Azure, which you never have to pay for. And they essentially run in a shared environment, which is multi-tenant, shared environment where your website is co-hosted with a lot of other people. And in this case, you can also still increase the number of instances you want to run of the worker role or the roles, instances, processes on that box. So that's just in a multi-tenant environment, you can still increase the capacity. But you can also switch to a reserved mode. We've put a safeguard for you based on a lot of feedback. This will actually have a billing impact. So we tell you, hey, please remove the spending limit. So feel free to get charged. Then you can pick fully dedicated machines that you want to scale up to. In preview, of course, we cap this to 3 machines. But the minute I spin this up, it tells me all the websites that I have today running in the data center, which will get upgraded to this new reserved mode. I say hit OK. And this scaling takes, actually it's already done. So this scaling takes about 3 to 5 seconds because we have pre-allocated capacity, pre-reserved capacity, and all we do is we just spin off your site on those machines. So let's see what happens when I hit that behind the covers. So in the shared instance, you're running on a pool of machines, and the green thing is your website. When you just increase the process count, we just spin up more processes, but still on the shared set of machines on that infrastructure. When you switch to the reserved mode, we take your website, and we run this on a dedicated VM. You still don't have to manage the VM. So unlike a web role or a VM, you're still not responsible for the VM in any shape or form. We guarantee that you get a full machine, which means there's no code being co-located with anything else. You don't have to worry about any trust modes or partial or full, none of that stuff. It's a full VM dedicated for you. If you have multiple websites, in which case I had 4, and you increase the reserve count, you can run all your websites on those 2 boxes. So that's something very unique to Azure, where you can both get multi-tenant as well as a dedicated, but still not have to manage the machines, and you can dynamically scale this up, scale this down. As I mentioned, when you're scaling it up, scaling it down, at the boundary of 1 hour, you only pay for the amount of capacity that you used till that point. So if you know that there's every evening you need to go do a lot of batch processing or a lot of expense reports need to get processed at 5 o'clock in the evening, you can scale up the capacity. If in 1 hour all your, let's say, expense reports are processed, you can always scale it back. You only get charged those 92 instances for 1 hour. And then you're back to running it on 5 instances. So you have pretty awesome control through the portal and through PowerShell to go do it. And from a billing perspective as well, you only use at the granularity of 1 hour of how much capacity you requested at that point. And that's a common question, if you typically know of patterns or you know that there's a Black Friday sale coming up or you're not sitting and watching this and you want to automatically scale it on load, there are a couple of different choices you have. If you're a developer, there's an enterprise, can't even remember the name, or Enterprise Library 5.0 Integration Pack. We need to get better at naming. Anyway, but this is a code block that you can inject into your application code itself. And this has, it looks up for events from the system and reacts based on that. But this is something that you would have to instrument, inject into your code while you're developing the application itself. On the other hand, even as a developer or IT pro, you can do it after the fact. The whole bunch of PowerShell scripts available to be able to look for metrics and kick off, you know, increase VM, decrease VM commands. Or we've partnered closely with AppDynamics to build an auto-scaling solution where you can trigger off scaling based on business rules, time of day, and actually just use some simple UI to go configure that. And actually, we'll see a demo of that in the next 5 minutes. So that was the fourth concentrated member on scaling. And what we've done is we've taken all this core platform capabilities, but also partnered with a whole bunch of great partners that we have across monitoring, deployment, configuration stacks to offer and augment our solutions that we provide out of the box. And for that, let me just invite Alex from AppDynamics to just give a quick demo of both rich monitoring as well as auto-scaling applications with Windows Azure.
Thank you, Karan. Can you hear me well? I'm really excited to show you what AppDynamics can do for your Windows Azure applications. And first of all, to enable AppDynamics, you just need to go to Windows Azure Marketplace and sign up for AppDynamics. And when you do that, it immediately instantiates an instance of the AppDynamics server directly in the Windows Azure cloud. So all the monitoring and management traffic will be local inside the Azure. And next thing you need to do, you need to install the agents. And to do that, it's really simple step. You download it, you include it into your project file for each roles of your project which you want to be, want to be monitored. And third step, you need to publish your projects, and that starts monitoring automatically. Our agents require zero configuration, and right now we're looking at, can you see it? Right. Right now we're looking at the application performance monitoring dashboard, which automatically detects the flow of the request through your instances across all your roles, and we support all Microsoft.NET Framework features as well as Windows Azure features like SQL Azure or Storage or Service Bus. And you can see the performance of each node, how many requests we have right now, what's the performance, response time. So this is really high level map, and it will highlight you whenever you have a problem, which is the critical path. But then you want to drill down to business transactions, and business transactions are automatically detected based on your application, however you enter the system. And we automatically baseline them, and we watch for the problems. And whenever you have a problem, we will see that, okay, we'll have some service levels based on my availability, and you can drill down to the errors, slow requests, or let's see the very slow requests. And whenever you have that, you can drill down into the snapshot details, which contains the deep dive troubleshooting snapshot, how we call it. And from there, you can see what the performance was on each tier, on each role, if you will, for your Windows Azure deployment. And you can drill down into the actual code stack level with the duration information and all the outbound calls, like database calls, web service calls, calls to the other nodes. And this is exactly the information you want to pass to your development team so they know what was happening to your application and why it was performing slow and what they need to do to fix it. Let me show you a really last important feature which I wanted to demonstrate, which is auto-scaling. And that's really easy to sign up for auto-scaling. You need to do two actions to define that. First one, you need to configure your actions, like scale up and scale down. And it includes the tier, which is your node, like front-end or middle tier, your web role, your worker role. Then you want to set, I want to scale up for a maximum number of 3 instances, for instance, so you don't want to get out of that limit. And this is the minimum number of instances, and how many instances you want to spawn at the scale-up action. Like maybe you want to do 2 actions, rapid scale-up when you have really critical criteria, and normal scale-up when you just do one by one. And the deployment slot, which is either staging or production. And then you need to link that scale-up action to the policy, let me open this one, which is defined based on different criteria, and by default you may want to do that based on the load, or you can include CPU metrics, performance, rate of errors. So you define your policies, when to run it, always or during the business hours or during your own schedule. We'll use evaluation every 20 minutes in this case. Then you pick up which tier you want to scale up using this action, front-end, worker role, something else. So I want to do front-end only in this case. And here's the set of criteria. You can do multiple conditions. This one tells me that I want to evaluate calls per minute, which is my load, and whenever it goes off the specific value or maybe a baseline, whichever you want to specify, and here's I want to do when it goes over 100 per minute as average on a tier or on a specific node. I want to execute my scale-up action. And that's pretty much everything you need to configure your scale up and scale down. After that, you save it, and it'll be automatically scaling up and scaling down based on the load or response time of CPU being used. Don't forget to configure your scale down actions, so you make sure it goes down when you have no load. That is it. That's pretty simple to sign up, and it basically requires you 5-15 minutes to configure everything and start collecting data. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alex. So the good news is all of this is available for free. So there's a version of AppDynamics with auto scaling built in available for free for Azure customers as well. So go try that out, and you should be able to both use the native features of Azure as well as tools from our ecosystem and partners like AppDynamics to actually go manage for free out of the box your applications as well. So real quick, just to summarize what we've seen so far and you know, things we have available. Windows Azure Management is available through Portal. We just walked through that, and it gives you control over all services and applications. Scripting is available both for Windows and other platforms and a third-party ecosystem as well. So the bunch of other sessions, the few I would recommend going to is a deep dive on monitoring and management. That's tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And there's a Windows Azure internal, so if you're interested in how the whole Fabric controller and all the cool stuff works, Mark Rusinovich is doing a session at 3:15 today afternoon. And, of course, System Center for doing a deep dive into managing apps across both your private cloud, Azure. So if you're not yet into Azure, you can see how you can migrate to Azure. Or if you're using both Azure and on-premises, you can manage through one pane of glass, which is System Center. So do fill in your feedback, and thank you so much for joining us. I'll leave the remaining 10 minutes for Q&A. Thank you.